You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 23rd, 2018. And this is episode number 347. And as always, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, kind of a busy week. A lot of interesting stuff happened to me and is happening out there in the paranormal world. And some sad news today. The Eastern Cougar is officially extinct. Yeah, it's been a long battle. But it's over. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight. You can tell I'm not happy about that. Oh, and by the way, east of the Mississippi was the Eastern Cougar. They're extinct, right? But there's a cougar sighting in Chicago again. Bigfoot discovered via video. That's right. It's over. We found it. Not really. There's a little asterisk next to that one, if you know what that means. And think you can figure out how someone throws a tree through the woods? Well, funk not. Meteor Madness in Michigan. And we'll also have the Book of the Week. Yeah, Meteor Madness. Boy, was that fun last week. Well, before we get into that, just want to let you know that this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, to quantum physics, to cosmology, to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. That's a mouthful, but it's a great school. And what do I have here in my anomalous notes? Well, we're going to talk about the Michigan Meteor Madness later on here in the show, but I do have a blog. If I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. I did post it because it seemed like there was a lot of mayhem going on, a lot of confusion. And normally, obviously, I'll just wait till the next Tuesday to talk about these stories. But sometimes I really feel like I've got to get this out there. And big thanks to my producer for bringing this to my attention, that there was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of confusion and a little bit of chaos and a lot of misunderstanding. So I threw together a blog and put it out there, and I'll share that link a little later in the show in case you haven't seen. It's already on my Facebook page, and it's also, well, if you go to the main site, Paranews Insider, if you click on the blog tab up at the top there, it'll take you right to it, and you can read all about this story that I'm going to be talking about. And seems like it did save a few people some confusion. I've had some comments through there and some comments through email, so really glad I wrote that, and got a little bit attention there on the anomalous for that as well. What is going on? Well, got a major show announcement coming up. I'm not going to announce it yet. We'll talk about this probably in 2 weeks. It's a major announcement. This show, this live show, is going to be changing. And it all starts on February 13th. What's the change? You're going to have to find out. You're going to have to wait. These are called teasers. This is what we do in the media business. We tease things. We got to get you to come back somehow. Got to bribe you. Can't stick money in the microphone, but I can sure stick these teasers out there. Major announcement about the show going forward, coming up in 2 weeks. I don't know, maybe next week. You'll just have to tune in and find out. The events listing. I mentioned the paranewsinsider.com website. I've finally gotten around to updating some of the events. There's a few that I still have to search for and see whether or not their websites have come online or they've made some decisions about when and or where their conventions and conferences are going to be held. But I have updated the events listing. I've added a few ghost events, a couple of cryptid ones. So I highly recommend you check it out. And I think I mentioned this before. It's kind of flattering. I've seen a few people out there copy and paste it on their websites. That's great. I love that. It's really flattering to see people copy my work. Hopefully those people that copied it will update it as I update it. And it'd be cool if you actually let people know where you stole it from, but it is what it is. But at least my personal events are on there too. It's kind of cool. That's how I noticed it. But anyway, if you have any information about any event and you don't see it on that list, and let me tell you, people have stolen this list for one reason and one reason only. It's a pretty darn good list. There's a lot of events on here, and yeah, it's not all inclusive. There's some that I'm sure I'm missing. And these are just North American paranormal conferences. And I don't really like to do the ones that are the scare cons, the horror cons, or, just some of these I just don't like to do. But focus on the ones that actually have people from the paranormal speaking, talking about things. I think those are important. But if you have any information about any event that's not on this list, no matter what it is, if it's cryptozoology, UFOs, or ghosts, let me know. And I'll be the judge and jury whether or not I'm going to put it on the list. Odds are I will. I'll put it on the list. And trust me, a lot of people look at this list. I may not get a lot of hits on the website, but the events page by far gets the most clicks. People search for this stuff. And I don't know. It's a very popular page. So if you want your stuff out there and advertised, I highly recommend just letting me know about it. It's probably the most contact I get through email. And if you want to email me, insider@paranewsinsider.com, or if you go to the paranewsinsider.com website, there's a little contact form for people that like those kind of things. You could just click and paste whatever you got to say in there, and it's good to go. And speaking of conferences, conventions, well, if you didn't know, I've got one coming up. The Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, it's mine. That's right, I own it. I've designed it. I'm doing everything for it. My wife is helping me out quite a bit with this. But it's the first time I've ever done a conference. I don't know what got into me last year. I just decided to do this and jumped in with both feet and said, why not? Let's try it. So Saturday, February 17th, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday, February 17th, I'm going to be presenting the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference. I mean, you've never heard of Twinsburg. Twinsburg is pretty much right in between Akron and Cleveland, Ohio, Northeast Ohio. I know, it's crazy. February in Ohio, Northeastern Ohio, a conference? Are you crazy? Yeah, well, we've had some pretty bad weather, but I don't know. I think it'll be all right. I really do. It's only a few weeks away now, but we've had a 50-degree day a couple of days ago, so we'll see. I think it'll be okay. I'm not going to worry about it. A lot of people have bought tickets already, so it's going to be a really good event. And I mentioned last week some of the speakers that are going to be on hand. And I want to mention, who did I have? I was going to talk about somebody here. Oh, yeah, Ron Murphy. Ron Murphy, my gosh, this guy is one heck of an author, one heck of a researcher, and I'm really excited to have him here. He's from Pennsylvania, so he's one of the furthest people away, but he is extremely knowledgeable, very good background, written a lot of books, book on mermaids. Ron, I got to get that book. I haven't got that book yet. Unexplained World of Chestnut Ridge, that's one of his latest books, Chestnut Ridge, and I believe that documentary was made about that and used a little bit of his work. The Haunted History of Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. Another one of his good books on vampires. On Wild Man. I love that book. On Wild Man. Probably one of my favorites written by Ron. On Dog Man. Another really good book. And On Ghosts. Pretty blown away by that one. He did a heck of a job on that for a guy who's not really in the ghost field. But he did a phenomenal job with that. I'm trying to find his bio here. Let's see his bio. No, he has a degree. He's a writer. He's a researcher. Smart guy. Cryptozoologist as well. Mentioned that. So a lot of his stuff centers on cryptozoology. As obviously, mermaids, dogman. A lot of stuff dealing with creatures, especially in the Pennsylvania area, obviously. And what else has he written? He's got some regular nonfiction stuff, if you're into such a thing. But Ron, I've had the opportunity to speak with Ron at other conventions. I met him at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. I think that was 2 years ago. And last year, we both got to speak along with Colin Schneider. I'm sure you know who that guy is here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting. And Ron, Colin, and myself, as well as Stan Gordon, one of the premier researchers in Western Pennsylvania, probably all of Pennsylvania, probably the East Coast. My goodness, we were all speaking. So it was a great event last year, last July, and had the pleasure of talking to Ron quite a bit. And he's, like I said, an extremely knowledgeable guy, an extremely knowledgeable researcher, and also out in the field. He knows his way around the field as well. So let's see, he's going to be, you know, I don't even know what he's speaking on. I got to get a hold of him. But wanted to mention, you know, at least some of his titles, some of his books, and some of the stuff that he does. And he's a radio show host too. I forgot all about that. He has his own radio show. My goodness, this guy does everything. He studied history at Indiana University in Pennsylvania, studied art history at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, studied literature at the University of Pittsburgh. I mean, this guy's done it all. He's an excellent, excellent researcher, great background in research and investigation in cryptozoology. Not sure what all that is. Great guy as well. And just got some new news, new information about some people that are going to be in attendance. I've already got quite a few people that are going to be selling, some vendors, selling some books. We're going to have the Ghost Hunters led by Greg Faketic, who's a very well-known researcher in the area around Twinsburg. He's spoken at the public library a number of times over the years. His team is going to be on hand with all of their equipment, answering questions about ghost research and ghost investigation and the tools and technology. And he's pretty grounded, so I don't think we're going to have problems with me saying, oh, that stuff is garbage, because he knows his way around his stuff and a very knowledgeable and very well-respected researcher and investigator. But I just got word that Charles Cassidy Jr. and William G. Craigie will be in attendance. Between those two guys, Charles Cassidy has written, just talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Cleveland Ghosts, Paranormal Great Lakes, Paranormal Mississippi River, Great Lakes Folklore. And William Craigie, he's getting a little bit of attention with his book, Haunted Franklin Castle. That's probably one of the most well-known places here in Ohio, other than the Mansfield Reformatory. He's also written quite a few other books. Buried Beneath Cleveland, Ghosts of Put-In Bay, and some really interesting stuff. But his Haunted Franklin Castle book just came out last year, and it's it's big. He was also a guest on the original Ghost Hunters series, and he's also a musician, so that's cool. Maybe he'll play some Irish folk music. I don't know. We'll see. So I'm excited to have authors in the house, guys selling books, two very knowledgeable people from the Cleveland, Ohio area. That's to me, that's what it's all about, showcasing and focusing on people in the neighborhood of where these conventions are, because that's what makes it unique. So I'm really looking forward to this, and hopefully you are too. If you're interested, you can go to twinsburgparanormal.com. That's, there's no H on that. Twinsburg, T-W-I-N-S-B-U-R-G, paranormal.com, and check it out. Get your tickets now. So I'm going to cap it off eventually if it starts picking up. And like I said, there's a local article coming up that I may even be on the front page. I don't want to jinx it. It's going to be ridiculous if I am, because I already know one of the poses. That's going to be funny. Hopefully, well, either way, the article will come out. Whether I'm on the front, I don't know. But it's going to be fun. The convention is going to be a good time, and hopefully everybody shows up speaker-wise. But I do have a couple of backups as well as myself, so I'm not really worried about that. But I just want to relax and listen. But again, lots of great vendors, a huge, just an awesome lineup of speakers. I would pay $100 to see these guys, but I'm not going to charge you that. Don't worry. So don't forget, twinsburgparanormal.com for more information on the convention, the speakers, the speaker lineup. I got to update the vendor listing here tonight, probably. And yeah, again, Audrey Hamilton's going to be there. I talked about her last week, talking about her 1966 Presque Isle State Park UFO research that she's been conducting, and a book is on its way. Colin Schneider, host of the Crypto Kid radio show right here on WCJV, Digital Broadcasting. Brandon Masullo, who's been getting a lot of attention lately about his new book, The Ghost Studies, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences. This guy's been on more radio shows than I have, and he's like booked almost every single weekend of the convention. Man, should have wrote a better book. But he's I'm excited to see his stuff taken off. Very smart guy. And really excited to be able to have him booked at a convention, because it's going to be booked at a lot of places, I can guarantee you. Scott Sukel will also be talking about ghosts. He's the former ghost hunt manager and historian at the Ohio State Reformatory, probably one of the most popular places to investigate. I know for me, it was one of the first abandoned places I went to when I started out a long time ago. Amy Boo will be talking about the Bigfoot Research Arena here in Northeast Ohio. She's a member of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. And Aaron Clark from the Cleveland Ufology Project. I talked about him last week. The Cleveland Ufology Project was founded back in 1952, one of the oldest UFO organizations in the world. And he'll be on hand talking about local UFOs and UFOs in general. So that's pretty stout lineup, I would say, and a variety of speakers with a variety of backgrounds. We're going to talk about, oh, I know what Ron's talked about. He's going to talk about vampires. I forgot all about that. And so this will be a trip through time with vampires. I got to see this, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not really into vampires. I think it's a silly 80s thing. You know, maybe it was those cheesy movies from the 80s that kind of turned me off of it. But I'm telling you what, I've seen Ron's presentation on this, and I'm sure he's changed it since then, but it was really engaging. I learned a lot. I took a lot of notes, which, again, I wasn't really, you know, I was like, oh gosh, vampires, you got to be kidding me. But he did a heck of a job, and really surprising with all the history and a lot of the folklore and some stuff that you're not sure about if it, you know, could be true. So definitely you're going to want to listen to Ron Murphy at this convention. Anyway, enough about me, right? You came here for the news. And like I said, like I let off earlier tonight, very sad story. And I kind of knew this was coming. I heard rumors about it that the end was nigh with the Eastern Cougar, that there was going to be some sort of decision coming up pretty soon. Rumors. But then finally, all of a sudden, I saw the story late last week that there was going to be a decision coming this week. And it was today. And it's been, it's official. It's officially official. I think it's officially. I think that's how it goes. The Eastern Cougar is now extinct. After the U.S. Wildlife U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service removed the eastern cougar from the endangered species list today. And the delisting rule was set to be published today. I didn't actually get a confirmation of that with the government closure, but I think they already had all that stuff done in advance. And the actual effect of this will actually be in 30 days. So we got 30 days. We'll have a party. The eastern cougar was added to the Endangered Species Act back in 1973. And the Fish and Wildlife Service can remove species from the federal list of endangered and threatened wildlife if protections are no longer needed due to recovery, original data error, or extinction, which is pretty much the latter. There is the reason why. In 2011, a 110-page report was presented after a four-year study that stated the eastern cougar was officially declared extinct but not removed from the list. So in 2015, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed a rule for delisting the eastern cougar that would eliminate it from federal protection and funding. And it took 3 years, 2.5 years. It was like in June. Now, of these moves, the agency said, quote, accounts suggesting that most eastern cougars disappeared in the 1800s as European immigrants killed cougars to protect themselves and their livestock as forests were harvested. As white-tailed deer, the cougar's primary prey, nearly went extinct in eastern North America. The last records of eastern cougars are believed to be in Maine, 1938, and New Brunswick, 1932, unquote. I kind of disagree with that statement, though. European immigrants killed cougars to protect themselves? They never attacked people. They were just afraid of them. They didn't really attack livestock. They had plenty of deer. But it's just sad. If you read anything about the eastern cougar, you read about the devastation of how people would just go on rampages and kill hundreds of these cats for no reason. Nobody was attacked. They didn't hold villages hostage or anything like that, or run through and devour our children, anything like that. They were just killed because people were afraid of them, pretty much. Anyway, get off my soapbox here. While the Endangered Species Act has been 99% successful at saving species from extinction, it is well believed that the eastern cougar was long extinct prior to being placed on the Endangered Species Act list. Well, this latest move has brought up some of the concerning aspects of the mountain lion. And if you listened, I believe it was back on January 8th on Colin Schneider's Crypto Kid radio show, we talked a lot about the eastern cougar and some of the issues behind it. And many people feel that the North American mountain lion is actually just one species. There are no subspecies from the eastern cougar to the western cougar to the Florida panther. But that creates a concern. And this is probably one of the reasons why people are not pushing forward to put all these mountain lions into just one species. Well, one of the reasons, because the Florida panther is pretty much critically crippled with their population. They're cut off from any other viable breeding population down there in southern Florida, and their numbers have dwindled due to basically encroachment from neighborhoods and from south. Basically, Southwest Florida, it's just growing, and they're taking over even the swamplands, and tourism is pushing these cats out. Houses are built constantly. Neighborhoods are popping up. You know, I've been in that area a few times over the last couple of years, and it's amazing. If I'll go there every other year, go down to like Fort Myers Beach, and then we drive down and check out the area, drive through there where the park is, the preserve for the Florida panther, and it's just amazing how many housing developments just pop up within 2 years' time and how much development occurs in these CVS on every corner down there. And you see the mountain lion warning signs. It's kind of funny because they're black cats. You know, like the deer signs, you see the black deer on there. Well, they're black cats. It's just funny to me because it's, you know, it's the folklore of the black cats. But anyway, it's just sad to see their areas being deteriorated, and cat car accidents happen quite a bit. And 99% of the time, the car wins. And so the other issue is inbreeding, because you don't have that sustainable population anymore. And they brought other cats in from out west to try to help with that. It's kind of sort of helped. But I think the Florida Panthers days pretty much are numbered. And I wouldn't be too surprised to see in the next decade that they're completely gone, or that they're going to have to start eliminating these cats for some of the deformities and other issues that are happening down there. Really sad state of affairs. But, you know, we could solve this if the mountain lions were allowed to move back out east, where they're supposed to be. And that's the other major debate going on: allowing the mountain lion back to its former habitat in the east, and to allow nature to return a bit of balance. But again, like I mentioned, if they combined all of these mountain lions, it could create a little concern for money and helping the Florida Panther. But I don't think that's going to happen, because I think they like it the way it is. Because with this move, officials are pretty much allowing states, all these eastern states, which, by the way, are the same ones back in 2011 that were part of that five-year review that decided that, well, these cats aren't here. They're not here anymore. So we want it made extinct. So if a certain species is made extinct, if these cats were to move into these states, since the eastern cougar was deemed extinct, they can kill at will. They don't have to have any kind of federal agencies do any kind of DNA work. If they have a mountain lion in their state, they can just kill it at will, because now it's delisted. Now it's officially extinct. So the western cougar can be viewed basically as varmint, as a creature that shouldn't be existing. It's a what do they call that? Well, anyway, you know what I'm saying. A creature that shouldn't be in that area. So they can just kill it off at will and do what they want with it, which is what they're doing right now. Nebraska, South Dakota, and a lot of other Midwestern states, these cats don't stand much of a chance, especially from the court of public opinion, basically from politicians and livestock owners. They pretty much have the run of the mill with what's going to happen to these cats, and it's pretty much shoot at will, shoot on sight, eliminate it, kill it, get rid of it. We don't want it here kind of attitude. I know we've had same story here in Ohio a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned this story. Youngstown, Ohio, which is right on the border of Ohio and Pennsylvania. The Ohio State Patrol officer was talking about this mountain lion, said, we'll kill it. As soon as we see it, we'll kill it for public concern, for public safety. Okay, well, this cat traveled like hundreds of miles. And you don't have a trail of bodies. So what's the problem? It's just, it goes back to what I was saying about the cats being eliminated from the east. It's just fear. You have a far higher chance of being killed by a bee or struck by lightning than you do being attacked and killed by a mountain lion. We're not on the list. They don't want to eat us. But people have this fear. I think they're amazing creatures. And I don't know why, but years ago I got sucked into researching these, and it's become one of my favorite animals. And now officially the eastern cougar is really a cryptid. It's not supposed to exist officially. It's extinct, and it's really sad. Let me get a link here. If you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on live links to these stories. But the good news is I will be sharing these links throughout the week, so you'll get a taste of this stuff. Yeah, deer. A viable breeding population of mountain lions, they'll take care of the deer. They'll cull them naturally. We don't have to have, well, we got to kill 20% more deer this year, and then we'll have to cut back next year. They take care of this stuff. And one thing that researchers don't understand about mountain lions is that mountain lion population is self-sustaining. They're not going to have 500 cats in a 100-square-mile area. It just wouldn't happen. They don't do that. That's why they're dispersing, because there's too many cats. They take care of each other. They take care of nature. They bring a balance. They will cut down. Yes, mountain lions will get hit by cars, but also they're going to take care of the deer. They're going to cull the deer population. And one of the things with deer, when you have mountain lions, they actually limit their range. They're actually more heightened aware. They're not going to run out in front of cars as much. That's almost a proven fact. If you look out west and you look out east, deer car collisions are a lot lower in states with mountain lions than they are in states without mountain lions. It creates a little bit of fear in the deer, and it kind of pretty much puts them back to where they should be. And the deer actually act differently as well when there's viable mountain lion, populations in the area. So it could totally and completely change the ecology and bring it back to where the way it should be. And I'm totally in favor of it. I have no problem hiking in the woods, knowing that there's a mountain lion in there. Heck, everybody has stories about seeing mountain lions. So if people already think that they're there, what's the problem? Put them out there. That's what I always say. That's my little rant for this week on mountain lions. Probably have one a week because I'm just kind of irritating me about this whole deal. But anyway, just want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, the cat lover. You know, it's funny because I'm a dog person. I had cats a long time ago. They're okay. Not my favorite thing. Not my favorite thing at all. But I don't know. Love these mountain lions. They're the second largest wild cat in North America. Yeah, next to the jaguar. Got it. Good job. But I don't know. Just their plight, just what they've been through, being hunted by, hunters killing hundreds of these things, along with bear and deer. They did the same thing to wolves as well. We used to kill everything. My gosh, you talk about gun control. We should have had gun control in the 1800s. That's really when we should have had it. So we killed pretty much anything and everything. Passenger pigeons, bear, deer, elk. I mean, you name it, we killed it. It's moving, shoot it. That's what the mentality was back in the day. And speaking of back in the day, that's where we're getting our book of the week. Yeah, believe it or not, this is all tied in. It was a great segue to the book of the week. And this week's book of the week, fittingly, is The Quest for the Eastern Cougar: Extinction or Survival by Robert Tugias. And don't worry, I have a cover for that, Dita. I'll get that in there momentarily. Yeah, I knew this was coming, and I got a slew of mountain lion books for Christmas this year. I know it's weird. People usually get socks, but I get books. That's just me. So I had a lot of reading to do, and a lot of these mountain lion books. Maybe I might have a project coming up. I don't know, maybe not. But I don't know. I just really want to read and learn more, as much as I can, really, about these cats, to learn from various experts. And this particular book here really piqued my interest because I have a lot of other books that are basically regional books on mountain lions. I have ones from Kentucky. One's from West Virginia. I've had one from the Carolinas. I have books from California and Florida. So it's interesting to see the difference in the researchers and the research from these various areas. And The Quest for the Eastern Cougar: Extinction or Survival is essentially from the Northeast. So it's Vermont, Connecticut, that area, as well as Maine. So a lot of the researchers involved with this are based in that area from a long time ago. And it's a nice story. It's the sad story, like I just mentioned, about people killing these things off, but it really does talk about the Eastern Cougar. This book was published in 2011, so it was just about that time. They do talk about the all the political stuff that happened, and as well as the mountain lion that traveled all the way to Connecticut and was unfortunately struck and killed by a car on the Wilbacross Parkway, and proved that mountain lions were not just escaped exotic pets, because that was the mentality back in that time frame, mid 2000, 2010-ish, all the way back to 2000, even the 1990s and 80s. There was no way a mountain lion could ever make it to the east. It's impossible. They're all escape exotic pets. Now, that mentality has changed. They know that they can come out to the east. They've been seen all over the place. And yeah, the front cover's cool. And you noticed, if you look closely at the cover of the book, the cat has blue eyes. Now, mountain lions as adults don't have blue eyes, but the youngsters do. And it's very fitting that they would have this young cat on the front cover. It looks like a male to me. And you can see a little bit of kind of stripes in its fur as well, which is also a sign that it's a young cat. And to me, it's fitting because these are the kind of cats that we're seeing out here in the east, east of the Mississippi River, with the exception of Florida. These are the younger cats. These are the young males looking for territory to cover. They're looking to establish. And it's kind of the tone of this book. It talks about the eastern cougar, people that have researched it, people that have spent years and years and years out in the field looking for these cats, and most of them never found anything. And even some of the greater researchers, a man named Bruce Young, you may not know who, Bruce Wright. I always get those two guys confused. Bruce Young is an actor. Bruce Wright, very well-known researcher. If you've seen the picture that I mentioned of the last cougar was shot in 1938, one of the famous pictures of this stuffed creature, which didn't happen back in the 1930s. This picture actually happened, I believe, in sometime in the 1960s. He took a picture with this stuffed mountain lion. That's the purportedly the last one shot in Maine. That's Bruce Wright posing with that. Again, that was much later after. That's why the cat looks kind of funny, the way it was stuffed. It looks a little weird. But a lot of researchers, and again, this is all like New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, and even some Canadian stuff. And so it's interesting to see how people have been researching this stuff since it's thought to have been extinct. And this also goes back and tells the sad history of when these animals were driven to pretty much extinction, which they were officially. Tons of information here. So it's, if you're interested in learning more about the eastern cougar, and it does have a lot of stuff that's ties into modern stuff. Again, it's 7-year-old book, but it does talk about a lot of the controversies, some stuff that I just talked about here, about cats from the west moving this way and allowing them to establish themselves, and some of the political things. There's actually some conspiracy theories. I kind of touched on that a little bit about state agencies killing at will and not allowing these cats to reestablish without even thinking about it. And one chapter that I had no idea was actually in this book talks about Black Panthers, melanism. And, you know, obviously I've done a presentation about that and really interested in that. But it also, I was shocked to see that Lauren Coleman is mentioned in this chapter, and they talk about some of the work that he does and some of the research he's done. And it does talk a lot about cryptozoology with some of these sightings and some of these findings and some of the folklore behind the Black Panther. So I thought that was really cool. And, you know, just some of the supposed black cougar, the only one that's supposedly ever been photographed that was shot and killed back in Costa Rica, 1959. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. But a lot of great work here. And with the cryptid stuff, which I didn't expect. I just got it for the eastern cougar. Little did I know there was a whole chapter that's basically talking about the cryptid angle of this. And, you know, it goes on to, toward the end of the book, it really explains what to look for if you're interested in being one of these researchers, which is kind of where I'm at. And it's amazing to read all these different books and to see how these people have gotten sucked into these mountain lions and these stories and just drawn to the. And that's kind of how I feel, too. I just really feel drawn to these creatures and want to help them out, want to try to help get them established to the east. I think it's only fair. I mean, they've done all this in the west, and why not out here in the east? So this is a big book, too. Big book. A lot of reading. A lot of pictures, though, so don't worry if you're into such a thing about pictures and diagrams. And it shows different things to look for, prints and predation methods and different things. 317 pages. So it's a thick book. Again, 2011 was published The Quest for the Eastern Cougar, Extinction or Survival by Robert Tugias, the book of the week this week. And moving on, more news. And yeah, we're going to Chicago. And I mentioned in 2011, just as the Eastern Cougar was declared extinct, less than three months after the ruling, one was struck and killed in Connecticut by an SUV. SUVs, by the way, are one of the largest predators of deer, next to semis and people. While many were quick to say this was, again, an exotic pet released, that was the first thing that was said when this cat was discovered. A lot of people thought, oh, nope, got to be exotic pet. There's no way one wandered over 1,500 miles from the West. Common opinion, it was discovered that this was a wandering male from the Black Hills area of South Dakota. Back in 2008, another wandering cougar was cornered and shot in a residential area in the outskirts of Chicago, Illinois. Well, now the city of Glendale Heights, just 30 miles outside of Chicago, is on high alert this week as another cougar was sighted in the area. The possible mountain lion was seen at the East Branch Forest Preserve last Friday, and so far, there's no update on the animal. Of the sighting, officials from the Forest Preserve police said, quote, on Friday morning, a visitor notified the Forest Preserve District of a possible cougar sighting on the west side of the preserve. A Forest Preserve District police officer who responded to the call also reported seeing an animal that looked like a cougar. Officials from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources and Forest Preserve District who arrived shortly afterward were unable to confirm the sighting. The district is placing trail cameras at the preserve, unquote. I don't think that's going to do a lot of good because I think this cat is on the move. And Brian Kraske, an ecologist at the Forest Preserve District, also added, quote, if it was a cougar, it is highly likely it was a young adult searching for a mate or suitable habitat and was just passing through. I think I just said that. Many wildlife species move through the landscape using passageways such as river corridors and railroad tracks, both of which are present at East Branch, unquote. Well, I think that's well said, and I do have to agree. It's just passing through. But the part that I don't agree with is the unfortunate thing that mountain lions really just don't use passageways, rivers, and railroad tracks. They kind of very sporadic. And you can't predict mountain lions, especially a young male. This is why the one was killed back in 2008. Wandered into a residential area on the outskirts of Chicago. They've done this before. They just go to the wrong area. And that's when, unfortunately, they're put down because people just don't know how to react to it. And a lot of people feel that if you capture it, you shoot it with a tranquilizer, and you try to relocate it, it's just going to come back, which really isn't true. It's just going to find another place to go. But you know, it's just this mentality. And, you know, as long as a mountain lion sticks to the woods, avoids the city, probably stands a pretty good chance of moving eastward, which it probably more than likely will continue to do. Seems to me it's probably moving north into Canada and probably reach up there and then probably come down here in the United States. We'll see. But the sad thing here is, yes, it's probably a wandering male. But first, you'll more than likely never find a female this far from the Black Hills area. And last, sadly, it's sad but true, not to be negative, but he more than likely won't live to see the spring. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if we hear more about this mountain lion coming up. And let me get the link in there. I got a couple links. I have one link that's kind of the synopsis of that story. Then I also have the link to the actual forest where they made the statement of seeing this mountain lion. It's pretty much the same thing. And that's your mountain lion update for the week. It's pretty much the whole show. But I don't know. I think it's an important thing. And today is a big day for the mountain lion. Unfortunately, not a good day. But let's talk some Bigfoot. Why don't we? It's over. In case you weren't aware, the proof of Bigfoot, it's been discovered. It's over. We already found it. And it didn't take long for Bigfoot to show its blurry and distant self on video in 2018. A Canadian family filmed the Bigfoot on January 5th and then did what anyone would do to help validate their sighting. You know, they just uploaded it to YouTube, right? Sure. Well, the anonymous backstory accompanies this video on the YouTube channel Modern Galaxy, which is full of known hoaxed and fabricated Bigfoot and UFO videos. Trust me, because I did the searching. They're all a bunch of junk. But is this latest one legitimate? Now, in the video, the camera jumps around as a brown creature seems to stand up, turn away from the camera, and walk off into the woods. Yeah, in true Bigfoot filming fashion, we do not get enough information to make any sort of critical judgment as to what we see, and it's left to our imagination and our beliefs. I mean, it could either be a bear, a person wearing brown clothes, a person wearing a hunting outfit, or it could be an honest-to-goodness Bigfoot. But I would personally stand between a bear and a person. Well, I wouldn't want to stand between a bear and a person, but you know what I mean. I think it's probably a person. It's probably just a hoax. I'll say it. No one else wants to say it. I'll say it. I think it's a hoax. Even if it were a Bigfoot, we just don't see enough information in the video to proclaim that this is really a Bigfoot. I mean, beyond our wishes and hopes. Again, it's just left to our imagination and beliefs. Not enough detail, folks. Get closer. Get a better camera. That's all I got to say about that. So I'll throw the link to that. Also have the YouTube video link if you're so excited to want to see this little brown blur, the blob squatch, as they call it. Just, I don't know, it's the culture of Bigfoot research, the culture of Bigfoot investigation, to have these blobby, squatchy, blurry things pretty far away as you can, so you can't identify what it is. Yeah, that is. It is what it is. Now, another Bigfoot video is making the rounds. I usually don't talk about these older ones, but this one's getting a little traction for whatever reason. I don't know. And it's making the rounds. It's the analysis by Thinker Thunker, which I haven't heard much of him lately. Thinker Thunker, well, talk about him in a second. It's purportedly of a Bigfoot tossing a large tree. Yeah. The video was shot back in 2015 in Canada and seemingly takes place near a construction, or I guess it's a logging site. Now, in the video, we hear one of the workers talking about seeing something and then this something throwing a tree. In the enhanced video, we see a black blob, of course, move, and looks like it moves his little arm, and what appears to be a tree flying to the right of the screen. Thinker Thunker, he's an analyst of Bigfoot videos, and personally, I mean, this is just me speaking, so direct all your hate mail to me. I think he just seems to go a little bit too far sometimes with some of his analysis, with either proving the video cannot be human or that it could be a hoax. I mean, just way too much information. He focuses on one or two details and kind of ignores a lot of other things going on. It's just too sporadic in some of his stuff. I mean, he does a good job of analyzing stuff, but really just focuses on those details and doesn't really understand that there's other things that you could use or other things you could see or other things that explain these things. But he just gets so focused on one little thing and just stretches it out through the entire course of the video. And again, he makes a lot of great points. He also overanalyzes pieces of evidence beyond what is rational. And again, still doesn't look at these other aspects or even alternative explanations for what he's analyzing. And this latest video is the same thing. Despite coming up with some interesting numbers dealing with the height of the potential creature as well as the height and weight of the tree, he ignores other factors or other possibilities altogether. And I'll say it, I don't think he's correct in many of his measurements, including the distance of the object thrown, despite his best efforts to appear to have handled. Look at this video. You just It'd be nearly impossible for a man or even a Bigfoot to throw a 50 to 100-pound tree. Now, he's estimating it to be 12 feet tall. I think it's a lot taller than that. He's saying it's shorter, or maybe at 12 feet at most. But again, I think you're not taking some stuff into account, like the angle of the tree. You're just assuming it's straight up and down. But if that's an angle, it's going to be a lot longer. And throwing it with one hand, I mean, come on, that's got to be impossible. There's no way an arm without breaking would be able to throw an object that far, that's that heavy. And he shows over and over again, overanalyzes. I think he was, kind of in awe of these guys' physiques, that he shows these guys throwing these weighted, tossing these weights. It's not going to be the same as tossing these weights, as he demonstrates over and over and over and then over and then over again. This example uses momentum of the object. So these guys are going back with it and going forward or going around the circle and launching this stuff. Now, this creature that we're seeing uses brute strength, a lengthy object, not a small ball thing that's using kind of a lever and its own weight and its own energy really to launch itself. It's really not the person. Person's basically the fulcrum here. It's more like a javelin throw. Now, historically, I've seen many of Thinker Thunker's videos, and he seems to either lean toward a Bigfoot explanation or he just says, no way. I mean, there's really no middle ground. And it seems like a lot, I don't know, lately, I haven't seen stuff from him in quite a few months, but it seemed like there for a while, a lot of the stuff he was saying was a Bigfoot, or definitely a Bigfoot, or this evidence is great. Those videos went on to be admitted or discovered hoaxes or even misinterpretations. So I don't know. I mean, it's like I said, the analysis is nice. It's a little misplaced and it's not as sound as what he tries to make it sound. He tries to convince you that this is the only way it can go, which is not true. In this latest video, why do we not have any other information about the sighting, such as the loggers? How come no one's measured this tree? If it's such an astounding thing, why didn't anyone go and look? And if this creature threw a tree, it'd have to be some pretty deep footprints left over. There's no witness statements, no follow-ups, just a short little clip that we can't even tell even happened. Yeah, and I'll throw that video in the chat room as well. Don't worry. If you're not in the chat room, you're not listening live, maybe it's Wednesday for you or Thursday, maybe Friday afternoon. I don't know what your schedule is. I don't know when you're listening to my show, but I appreciate you listening anyway. And again, if you're not listening live, these links will be shared via social media, my socials, that'd be Facebook, that'd be Twitter, throughout the week. Kind of space it out. I don't put all seven or eight stories or however many stories I do all in one day. Kind of space them out for you, so you can look forward to them. Get excited. Boom. We have dancing chickens in the chat room. See what you're missing? Boom. There's a Bigfoot throwing a tree video. Enjoy that one. See, what else do I have? Oh, yeah. The biggest story of the week, last week, the meteor sighting that took place over the skies of Michigan last Tuesday evening, and the world lost their minds. The meteor lit up the skies and produced a sonic boom just a little after 8 p.m. Central Time. The boom created enough of a seismic wave that the meteor produced a 2.0 magnitude earthquake. And on the side of that, I know people are probably talking about the 7.9 or 8.1, whatever the magnitude ended up being of the earthquake off the coast of Alaska. It's some interesting stuff. And I try not to get all wrapped up in a couple of random events, but I do know that a few days prior to this, there was a couple in Hawaii. And just today, there's been a bunch of them, one off the coast of Africa, one off the coast of Indonesia, and West Java. That was a 6.0. A 5 points or a 5.4 in Papua New Guinea, and 3 days ago there was a pretty decent one in Chile. Fairbanks had one a couple of days prior. In the last 2 weeks, there's been a whole bunch of earthquakes, mostly in the Ring of Fire, which is the Pacific area. I don't know. I don't really want to read too much from that. I don't think it's anything to worry about, but it certainly is interesting. Now, back to Michigan and the 2.0 magnitude earthquake. It's a very localized event. It was in a small area, so not a lot of people really felt that. It's just a way of measuring waves that travel through the sky. Not a big deal. I don't know why the media just focused on the earthquake thing, which really has nothing to do with the meteor sighting. And it lasted less than a second. So it's not your traditional earthquake. It was more just like the sonic boom and you felt your house wiggle. And again, really no way to classify a meteor event. Now for me, I heard about the meteor event the night that it happened. I subscribe to the American Meteor Society and I get updates when any type of event like this happens. And to me, when I saw the story, I just kind of flicked by it. I didn't even think twice about it. Didn't seem like a big deal to me. It looked like a typical decent sized event with witnesses in multiple states, which happens all the time. There's been a few of them already this year and a number of them last year. A few days ago, there was a heavy boom that was heard over Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas, but not many reports of actually seeing a meteor, although it was concluded that it was a meteor. But this one over Michigan, hyperdrive, people went crazy. People were acting like the sky was falling. Now, first, I want to give a little quick lesson. I like to teach. I like to train here. Meteoroid. So a meteoroid is a piece of interplanetary matter that's generally smaller than a kilometer in diameter, which would kill us if it landed. Most meteoroids are in the size of a bowling ball or smaller, which is pretty much where this one in Michigan was. Maybe a little bit bigger than a bowling ball, but not by much. Now, a meteor refers to the flash of light seen when a meteoroid enters the Earth's atmosphere. So most small flashes of light in the sky are the meteoroid burning up and becoming dust particles, and usually nothing lands on the surface. Now, when a larger meteoroid that is more than a couple of feet in diameter streaks through the sky and becomes a meteor, parts of that meteor may survive the trip to the surface. Again, meteor refers to the streak of light seen, not the debris itself. When a piece of the object reaches the ground, it's known as a meteorite. Now I always think of it. I learned this a long time ago by thinking, I know this is going to sound weird, but trust me, this is how I learned this. Oid or ite. Oid or ite. That's how I know my meteors and where they go. They go from sky to, they go from space to sky to ground. Oid or ite. I don't know. That's how I learned it. Don't make fun of me. Well, it wasn't long after the initial sightings that NASA, the American Meteor Society, and other agencies determined that it was a meteor sighting. And Twitter and Facebook were full of images and videos of the event. The event was seen from Ontario, Canada, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa. It was also a series of three photographs that displayed what someone described as light pillars coming from what appeared to be a large fire that was taking place in Taylor, Michigan. Now, I don't think the intention was to state that this was from the meteoroid impact, but many were spreading this as a rumor, and the photographs were shared thousands of times between Tuesday night and Wednesday, creating a lot of undue panic. Some even stated this was proof of a missile attack that was quickly being covered up, or at least an impact site where something was destroyed by the meteorite. Now, the fact is the photograph showed a garage fire that occurred in Taylor, Michigan around 8:25 p.m. local time, which was less than a half hour after the meteor sighting. So a lot of people put those two things together. There was even video. People were taking video from the fire and saying that this was where the meteoroid landed and did catch the thing. So this kind of went out of hand really quick. and people were getting really, really confused about the timeline here. Taylor is an area southwest of the metro area of Detroit. Now, again, there was a YouTube video of people visiting the fire stating it was caused by the meteor. So most people were confused and concerned as to what was going on. And again, rumors running rampant. People were talking about missile attacks and all this stuff and people dying and cover-ups. And I don't know where the cover-ups came from, but people were mentioning that. Of course, there's always a conspiracy when something is going on that you don't understand. It seems like the things go hand in hand. So I decided that I got to document this right away. And waiting for a week, well, I guess 6 days, wasn't good enough. So I did write a blog on Wednesday and had it published by about 7:30 p.m. So essentially less than 24 hours later, I had the information out there. I submitted the story to the Anomalist News website. That's probably one of the most widest read paranormal news sites out there. And they covered it. It took a couple of days. They had it on Friday. But people were still confused. So I'm glad I did it. Glad I put it out there. So the three photographs of a fire in Taylor, Michigan are true. They are of a fire in Michigan shortly after the meteor sighting, but they were caused by a garage fire at a residence where a man was working on his car in his garage. Nick Monticelli, a reporter from DIV Channel 4, WDIV Channel 4, an NBC affiliate television station based in Detroit, was live at the scene just after 10 p.m., where he tweeted, quote, "Taylor folks, a meteor did not hit a garage. Fire started inside as a man was working on his car, but there's a ton of people here," unquote. A story carrying his tweet was then posted around 10:15 p.m. Tuesday night, and other stories piggybacked the news. A story the following day described the incident as a man was working on his race truck. His racing fuel caught on fire in the engine compartment and quickly became an unmanageable fire. That story concluded with, quote, "Social media was ablaze within minutes of a photo being shared from down the street of the fire. People assume that due to the timeline, the meteor, or at least a piece of it, was responsible for the fire. Fire department officials confirmed there was no truth to that rumor. The leaking fuel and oil was the cause of the blaze," unquote. It was a blaze. So I'll throw my link, why would I not, into the chat room for the boom. That was pretty punny. For my Paranews Insider blog there. And what else? I got one more story about the meteor sighting. This is funny. Like I said, meteor sightings like this, they're pretty random. They happen all the time, and the big boom ones, the ones where actual debris lands, they happen maybe about once a month. They maybe happen 3-4 times a year in the United States, really kind of infrequent. And there are people that go out and find these things. These are, maybe they're not professionals, but they're hardcore amateurs. They have businesses, and they seek this stuff out, and it's pretty cool that they can find these things pretty quickly. Now, many people question why no one was monitoring this particular meteoroid, and people were panicking because of the government shutdown, that people thought that a meteor, was going to streak through the sky and blow us up when nobody would be watching, but that's not true. It's not true. While around 20,000 objects are constantly tracked, most of these are large and categorized by the potential energy they would create if they impacted Earth, as well as their likelihood of doing so. The meteoroid that fell to Earth was no more likely than probably 10 feet wide at most, probably a lot smaller than that. You know, that seems pretty big. That's really insignificant when it comes to the energy potential of striking the Earth. This particular meteor actually made it pretty low in the atmosphere before burning up because of the speed. It was very fast, very, very fast. It was estimated, I think initially it was 26 or 28,000 miles an hour. They upped that to almost 40,000 miles an hour. That's why it made it to a little bit a lower part of the atmosphere. And that's also why the boom was heard. And a handful of these meteorites have been discovered so far in Michigan. So it was probably not predictable. Since the object was small, it was more than likely not tracked. However, a senior pastor at a non-denominational Christian church in Downriver, Michigan, which is an area just south of Detroit, actually predicted a meteor sighting somewhere in the Great Lakes region and from Michigan back on New Year's Eve. Pastor Rick Satterfield, sounds like an 80s singer, made the statement during a taped event on New Year's Eve at the I Am Church church. Now, was this a miracle prediction? Is he the new Nostradamus? Well, he did predict it, and it is recorded. It's on video. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's pretty interesting. But how much meaning can we get from this? Pastor Satterfield said that this was not a doomsday prediction, but one of a, an quote, incarnation of great things happening in the region, unquote. Not sure where you're going to get that with the meteor. Well, Rick, I don't think that's going to change very much of what's going on out there. Now, during the sermon, Satterfield said he had a dream where the voice of God said that a meteor was going to hit Michigan, but not hurt anything, although it would be felt all over the world. I guess he was kind of right about that. He said that, quote, it would cause Ohio and Canada to feel the impact of it, unquote. His dream also said there would be a revival that starts here and spreads across the planet, bringing people of all religions and backgrounds together. Okay. He said, quote, I'm going to bless people in this region, restore them, and it's going to be financially, it's going to be physically, it's going to be mentally, unquote. Well, I think he got the mentally part right. The rest of it, not so sure. During this, he essentially called himself a prophet. You got to be careful about doing stuff like that. There's a place for people like that. But after describing the meteor crash, he tailed off from his first person account of his dream to a third person account of talking about the final harvest and prophets. And I don't know, I got kind of got lost there. So he really got sidetracked. He kind of really was fighting to make his point during that whole thing. First, this is comparable to someone predicting it's going to rain. I mean, let me throw this out here right now. I'm going to say it. It soon shall rain. The rivers will rise and people will become wet. I've predicted it here. I have dreamed it. The earth will shake. Water will rise. People will get wet. There it is. I'm a prophet. Please. Well, I'm not mocking religion, God, or anything else here. Other than the belief that this man said something vague and people are taking it, this as a message from God. And now this guy's trying to cash in on it. It's kind of weird. Now, a meteor did land in Michigan. That's pretty cool. But all the other things he said, I really have no meaning. And he's unfortunately using the popularity of this story to attract parishioners to his church. And if I get struck by lightning later on today, you probably know why. Hopefully I'll be okay. But I don't know. It's kind of a funny story, but then I kind of saw what was going on with that. And it, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of got a little carried away, I think he did. That's it. That's your news for the week. I know. It's sad it's over already. It was an hour. Jeez. The second fastest hour on Paranormal Radio. Because we all know Jim Mallard, the Mallard Report, is on at 9 o'clock, TMR247.net. He's got the fastest hour on the Paranormal Radio. So that's it. We are out of here. That's my new outro. Not really. I will see you next week. Don't forget to keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't let your brains fall out. No, that's not it. Above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.